Log Talk Radio.
Guys, Sportsaholics 24/7. We're back. We're live right now. Hope you guys are having a great third day of June. We got a few guys on today. I'm your host, John, joined by my co-hosts, Nick and Brandon. What's going on, guys?
Not much.
I'm happy. The Mets are on a winning streak.
Of course, Nick. Of course.
Nick, how could you ever be happy about the Mets? I can't trust you anymore.
So right now in the sports world, there's a lot of stuff going on. Just so everyone knows, we're going to have a World Cup show next week, hosted by Brandon and I, since Nick and Jordan are very anti-soccer, which I, quite frankly, do not understand. Anti-football. That's
a beautiful game.
All right.
Not like soccer.
Okay. All right. I guess that's kind of fair.
My opinion.
But we got a lot of stuff to talk about today. We're going to start off with Nick has a quick update on the French Open, the tennis tournament going on right now in full swing. We're going to move on later to the Clippers being sold, possibly. And then we're going to finish off the show with David Villa, the soccer player, previously on Atletico Madrid, now being signed to NYCFC, a new MLS team. That'll be playing in Yankee Stadium. So we got a lot to talk about. Nick, we're going to start off with you with your French Open overview. What's been going on right now? How's everyone doing?
Well, you know, Rafael Nadal. So now we are approaching the quarterfinals, and Rafael Nadal will be playing David Ferrer. Gael Monfils will be playing Andy Murray, Ernest Gulbis, and Djokovic in the men's. There. And then in the women's, Eugenie Bouchard beat Carla Suarez Navarro. Maria Sharapova beat Muguruza. And then there's Kuznetsova is going to play Halep. And then Sarah Arani is going to play Andrea Petkovic. So, guys, you have any questions?
Yeah, so
no.
Roger Federer is out, correct?
Yes, Roger Federer got knocked out.
That's awful, Nick. That's awful, Nick.
Now, you got some new guys at the top of the world's rankings. You got, like, Djokovic and Nadal. How much longer do you think Federer can go? He's starting to lose steam. How much longer do you think he'll go for?
Quite honestly, a few more years. I think he'll win one more slam at the very most. Because he's getting older. He is arguably the best tennis player of all time. Right now, he's still labeled as that. At the end of his career, that's going to be debatable. But at this point, he's already 33 years old. For a tennis player, that's pretty old. I think that in 2 years, he'll retire.
I think Federer is going to last about a similar length. I don't know, about 2 years, but maybe another 3-4 at the most. I think he will win two more Grand Slam titles, and one of them will be the U.S. Open. When, I don't know. I just feel like he'll win one more U.S. Open before the end of his career, and then he'll win another one, maybe the Australian or Wimbledon.
Brandon, I see your point, but here's the thing. Tennis players, usually by the time they're 33, are already retired. I don't think there's been one tennis player who has made it past 35. So I think two more years. While this is the toughest time in men's tennis in the history, I think, or at least from what I understand, and he has so much competition between Nadal, Djokovic, even guys like Stanislas Wawrinka. They can't – he's not going to be able to beat them. Like, the thing with Federer is that he – earlier in his career, I would always expect Federer to win just about every match. But now, since he's winding down, I don't even expect him to beat Djokovic or Nadal.
I think he still can. I don't know. You're right. He's not really expected to anymore. But I think Federer's still got a lot of juice left in him.
Here's the thing with Federer. And here's what he just started, well, because his new coach is Stefan Edberg. I'm sure you guys don't know who that is. And he was a big serve and volleyer. And because his new coach is now Stefan Edberg, was a serve and volleyer, he's taught that trick to Roger Federer. He started with that serve and volley game. And it's helped him and kind of hurt him at the same time. Against guys like Nadal, for example, against Nadal, that's going to hurt him because of this. Whenever you play Nadal, unless you hit the ball deep and to his backhand, never run up to the net because he's going to kill you. He has perfect control and can hit the corners on any part of the court, and that's going to kill Federer. That's one of the biggest problems I've had with him. And, Brandon, based on what I've seen last time Federer played Nadal, Nadal manhandled him. It wasn't even close. He's winding down.
I personally don't think that Federer is even close to the level that he used to be at. And I agree with Nick. I think that he will win one Grand Slam at the most. I won't be surprised if he doesn't win any more. Because, you know, it's the end of his career, and they're very competitive right now in men's tennis. And it's tough for a guy like Federer, who's getting up there in age, to compete with them.
But Nick, hold on. I got a question. Yeah. Nick, I got a question for you.
Okay.
All right. So the world number one right now, it's pretty much a toss up between a few guys right now.
It's not a
but
toss up.
Down the road, in five years, who do you see being the world number one? Is it one of the same guys you see at the top now? Is it some new prospect coming up now? Who do you think is number one in 5 years?
5 years. That's tough.
I don't think anyone that any of us have heard of right now will be number one. Like, I don't think that Djokovic will be. I don't think that Nadal will be. I think it's going to be some young guy that no one's heard of yet.
No, we would know who he is. I'm sure I know who it is. It's kind of hard to.
5 years is a long time.
I got a question. Is Andy Murray still around in 5 years?
Yes.
Yes, maybe.
I think so.
Maybe.
Yeah. I gotta go.
I don't know how many more players Murray's gonna win. But I feel like tennis players have figured out Murray's game, and he tends to. The problem with Murray is that he's consistent, which is a very good thing, but he doesn't have that much oomph to his shots. There's nothing really that special about his shots. It's not like Nadal, who has the best forehand in arguably in men's tennis history, who plays with tremendous topspin. Murray, he knows how to strategize, he knows how to hit, but he doesn't have the endurance that other guys have. He doesn't have qualities that make a tennis player a star. That's why I don't think he's going to win much more.
Now let's get back to this tournament itself, the French Open. Very quickly, Nick and Brandon, we're going to wrap it up on this. Who do you guys think will win the French Open this year?
Easily, Nadal. Because of this.
Yeah, I'm going to go Nadal, too.
Rafael Nadal.
I agree with that. He's by far the best player in the world right now.
Since 2005, Rafael Nadal has lost one match in the French Open. One match. He is easily the best clay court tennis player of all time. Easily.
All right, now moving on to the next topic, the Clippers. They, the whole Donald Sterling thing, and now they possibly have a new owner. He's buying the team for $2 billion. Are the Clippers really worth $2 billion?
Well, not in terms of what other teams have sold for in the past. I can see them go for $1 billion, though. Like, that's kind of realistic for a team to be worth $1 billion, but if any team is worth $2 billion, it has to be one of these big market teams like the Lakers, the Knicks, the Miami Heat even now, or maybe even the Brooklyn Nets considering how much money they've been making in the past 2 years. I don't think the LA Clippers, as good of a team as they are and as marketable of a team as they are even worth $1.5 billion, let alone $2 billion, which is what this guy's paying for now. I really don't understand why, but anything to get Donald Sterling out of the office, I'll take that, and I'll be happy with it.
I don't think
$2 billion.
It's not worth $2 billion. First of all, it's not worth $2 billion. The Clippers as a franchise just became good. So I think that, you know, they're looking up. And if you think about it, they should be worth less than $1 billion. But this whole fiasco with Donald Sterling has really boosted up their, you know, I don't want to say their image, but their popularity, definitely. Their revenue and everything. Yeah. So I think that that's really played a big part in it.
I mean, here's the problem I have with this whole thing. Donald Sterling is actually gaining so much in the situation. Look at all the money he's making off of being forced to sell the team. That's the problem I have with the whole thing.
Can I just take a second to say how much I love the Clippers organization now that this guy is going to probably be the new owner? I honestly think the Clippers, out of the elite teams in the NBA, have the brightest future ahead of them. Let's look at who they have right now. They have Chris Paul locked up for a few more years. They have one of the top power forwards in the NBA in Blake Griffin. They have Lob City in DeAndre Jordan. They have Jamal Crawford, who may be the best bench player since 2010. They have Doc Rivers, who is by far and away the best coach in the NBA right now. Forget about the playoffs and Popovich and all that other stuff. Doc Rivers is the best coach in the NBA. He gets the most out of his players for the most amount of time. He's a proven winner. He's a leader. And he's going to be locked up in L.A. And let's not forget, look at their cross, you know, city rival, the Lakers, who have absolutely no future outside of Kobe Bryant right now. They have no coach. They have no roster, and they really don't have a hope for the next couple of seasons at least. I mean, their draft pick isn't even that good. All the top prospects to be gone by then. What are they, 6, 7? Who are they going to get then? A kid from Australia, Dante Exum? I mean, come on. The Clippers right now have the brightest future in the NBA, and a new owner is the perfect catch to that bright future, in my opinion at least. I think this is the best move for L.A. This is going to bring a lot of great years for, you know, Clipper Nation, whoever they are, to come. And that's
it. Brandon, I'm going to disagree with you for a second. I don't think I'm not disrespecting your opinion or anything. I'm just asking, why do you think Doc Rivers is the best coach in the NBA?
Why? Because
why?
He's a winner. He's a proven leader. He's vocal. He gets the best out of his players, and he's a perfect fit for what Chris Paul runs in Los Angeles.
He's the perfect
coach for the perfect team, and that's basically it. Doc Rivers in Boston succeeded with an aging Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, and he succeeded kind of in a way when Rajon Rondo was healthy and they were not.
See, Brandon, I'm going to have to disagree. Me, personally, I would say the two best coaches in the NBA right now are Greg Popovich and Tom Thibodeau.
He's number two, obviously.
Tom Thibodeau is the most underrated coach.
Okay, I don't really like Thibodeau.
Let me explain. First of all, Brandon, let me ask you something. Name the starting five on the Bulls this past year.
This past year?
Name the starting five.
Okay, Kirk Heinrich, Jimmy Butler, Joakim Noah, Carlos Boozer, Luol Deng for half the year until he got traded to Cleveland. I don't know who he was replaced by because I don't really care about the Bulls. But
exactly my point. Look at other than Joakim Noah, nobody on that team is really very good. But he was still able to take them to the playoffs and make such a successful team out of basically nothing. If you take those coaches and say, put a mediocre coach there, how good would they be? Say you put Mike Woodson with those players. How good of a team do you think they would be? He clearly makes the best.
Yeah. Nick, I really don't know because it's not that Thibodeau is not a good coach. I like him. He is a very good coach. But he can't win when it matters most because he's such a defensive-minded coach.
that his offensive team and the roster that he has, there is no offense on that team at all outside of the ugliest player in NBA history in Joakim Noah. So
all right, really,
until Derrick Rose comes back, I can't judge Tom Thibodeau because he is a defensive coach working with defensive players, and there really is no offense on that team.
Okay, but he was still able to make so much out of it.
Yeah, he's still a great coach, but he's not on the level that Doc Rivers and Greg Popovich or, you know what, Eric Spoelstra
is better than Doc Rivers.
Getting to that level. I think Eric Spoelstra is as good of a coach as Thibodeau.
What on earth makes you say that?
I'm sorry.
Because LeBron, the entire
right, that's a point we can bring up. That's a point we can bring up when we do the final show, the NBA final show.
Okay. Okay.
All right, we can move on.
John, hello?
John, are you there? Maybe he hung up on us. He was sick and tired of all the coach talk.
John Gross, where are you? John.
Where the hell did he go?
Well, this is awkward.
All right. Anyways,
I'm going to go and continue right now. Just the other day, it was recently announced that David Villa was going to be transferring to the New York City Football Club, which is a new football club joining the MLS in 2015. They're going to be playing their games at Yankee Stadium. Shout out to the Yankees and Manchester City for allowing us to happen and for creating the team. David Villa was the first official signing of this club, and it is rumored heavily that Frank Lampard is going to join David Villa in New York, as well as a couple of other nice little role players from the BPL who, stay on the background. I really think that this is an awesome, awesome move for the U.S. and for soccer or football, whatever you want to call it, in the U.S.
Soccer.
Because it's a rising sport, and it is going to get so huge, and it's going to start next week. I'm sorry, in 2 weeks when the World Cup comes and the U.S., they're not going to make it out of the group of death. I don't even think they're going to win a game.
Hey, don't say that about my team,
no,
Brandon.
No, John. Okay, maybe they'll beat Ghana. But they're not beating Germany. They're not beating Ronaldo. That's not going to happen.
All right.
Anyways, David Villa, in case you don't know, if you're listening and you don't know who he is, he is a striker for Atletico Madrid, which is a team that plays in Spain in the BBVA League. And Frank Lampard, who's going to join him, is center mid for Chelsea Football Club, which plays the BPL, and they're based in England. And they're both very good. They're both kind of 80 players. Lampard's older than David Villa, but they're both quality players, and they're great. Great starting chip to have for any team, let alone any team in the biggest market in the world, and in a rising sport like soccer, football, or whatever. Nick, don't yell at me.
It's soccer. We're in America. We call it soccer in this country. Stop trying to distance yourself from your own people.
Nick, be quiet.
Yeah?
You know nothing.
Yeah, I know
soccer?
Soccer in this country.
Okay, whatever. It doesn't matter if it's called soccer or football, whatever. Soccer is a great sport. And in the U.S., it's gained a lot of popularity, especially since David Beckham came to the MLS when he joined the L.A. Galaxy a few years back. Before that, it wasn't that big. But now you watch MLS games on TV. You watch Team USA matches on TV. They're all crowded. They're sellouts. They're crazy fans, just like football fans, basketball fans, baseball fans, hockey fans, whatever. Yes, Nick, there are a lot of soccer fans in this country, whether you want to believe it or not. And you don't want to believe it because you're not a soccer fan. But there are a lot of soccer fans in this country. And like Brandon said earlier, the World Cup this summer, the U.S. has a big chance to make some noise. Because it's going to be very tough. If they can get out of the group stage and beat Germany or Portugal or Ghana, that will be huge for soccer in the U.S. And now with two of the best players in the world, David Villa and Frank Lampard, coming to NYCFC, which is a new MLS team, that can only elevate the popularity of the sport in this country.
See, John, as much as I'd love to think that the U.S. is going to even win a game, I don't know if that's going to happen. And I'm just being brutally honest when I say the U.S.
Okay.
doesn't have that great of a team. Yes, they are.
All right, and we can talk about this in a World Cup show.
Many good teams. No, we got 10 minutes. Let's keep going. They have beaten many, many other good teams, but they are not going to be able to face a Germany or a Portugal in the World Cup. This is the World Cup. This thing only comes around once every 4 years. And if the U.S. suddenly manages to get out of the World Cup, they have the world powers to compete against. Brazil, Spain, England, they're all there. And they're all standing in the way of the U.S. men's national team. And especially without Landon Donovan, who's been their proven leader, yes, I know it's a big controversy. He shouldn't be on the team. I think he should be on the team. Whatever, he's not. The U.S. has really no chance if they even get out, and I don't think they're even getting out. Again, maybe they'll beat Ghana. I see them beating Ghana if they can play, you know, a near-perfect game, because Ghana has a lot of pace. They have a lot of really good strikers. They're extremely fast. Their keeper's actually quite decent. But the U.S. really doesn't stand a chance. And, yes, they are going to make some noise because they are a good team. But when they go up against Germany, one of the best teams in the world, or when they go up against Ronaldo, because I don't consider Portugal a team, I just consider it to be Ronaldo and then everyone else, they're screwed. To put it
Brandon,
they are screwed.
Brandon, if you go up to Jozy Altidore, you go up to Clint Dempsey, you go up to Tim Howard, you go up
to
anyone on that team, any coaches on that team, and you tell them, oh, you guys have no chance, they're going to show you right now this World Cup. I'm telling you right now, I won't be surprised if they get out of the World Cup, if they get out of the group stage. And here's why. All that the U.S. has to do, and I make it sound easy, but it's not easy. They have to beat Ghana first game. If they lose to Ghana, it's going to be very difficult to advance. If they can beat Ghana, that's 3 points right there for a win. All that they need to do would be most likely to tie against Portugal or Germany. And if they win two of those three matches, they're definitely into the next rounds. But all they have to do is win one, tie one. That's all that they got to do. And I definitely think that the U.S. can do that. Because, like you said, Portugal is basically a one-man show. Portugal's a one-man show with Ronaldo. And the U.S., Jurgen Klinsmann, a great manager, great strategy, all that good stuff. I think they can really figure it out. They have a lot of experience with guys like Clint Dempsey, Michael Bradley, Jozy Altidore. They have one of the top goalies in the world in Tim Howard. And they are not scared of anyone. They're not scared of Ronaldo. They're not scared of anyone in Germany.
They're not scared
of anyone in Ghana. They're going in there, and they're going to play hard. And I think that they're going to get out of the group stage.
Okay. Yo, I totally respect that. I think that's a very bold prediction on your part, but it's a respectable prediction. However, what you said about them not being scared of Ronaldo, I mean, dude, if you went up to Ronaldo, you would crap your pants. Like, he is a very, very scary, intimidating dude. He is the best player in the world.
Brandon, let's move on.
He won a win in the Champions League. He won the Ballon d'Or for the first time.
Brandon, let's focus on this in the next episode about the World Cup, right?
Save it to the World Cup.
Yeah.
We're going to save it for the World Cup episode, which will be either late this week or early next week.
You got a final show, too.
All right. Nick has wanted to talk about the Mets for a while. We let him talk about it last episode. And since right now there's not a lot going on in the sports world.
What about the Stanley Cup Finals?
Nick, we'll give you 2 minutes to talk about the Mets before we talk about the Stanley Cup Finals. You said Juan Lagares injured or something? Go quickly.
Okay. This has really been on my mind lately and kind of been worrying me and really puzzled me. Juan Lagares is hurt now. All right. They just brought up Matt Sandecker. He did a great job yesterday in the field and with the bat.
Robbed
the
home
run in center field. He's starting in center field, all right? But here's what's really been bothering me, and I haven't really been able to sleep at night. Ruben Tejada goes on a huge winning streak, and basically it was clear to the entire Mets fan base that he had earned his starting spot back. Because Tejada's biggest problem has always been offense. But now he's proving that he can hit. What do? They start Wilmer Flores. I never understood that. Lately, what the Mets seemingly have been doing was, whenever players are doing well, they seem to say, well, they're playing well, let me just take them out and start the backup. They did the same thing with Eric Campbell, who was batting over 400. I understand he might not be a superstar, but it was working. I would rather see the Mets take players when they're playing well now, all right, and continue to play them, and once they start to suck, then they bring in somebody else. But clearly, Eric Campbell is a better choice than Lucas Duda. And I know Lucas Duda hit that game-winning home run a few nights ago. But still, it's not the point. Campbell is clearly the choice, and so is Tejada. I wish I could write an angry letter to Terry Collins.
All right, Nick.
Okay.
That's your rant about the Mets right there, everyone.
That is,
the world
that
famous
is,
Nick
that
DiMartino rants about the Mets.
Nick.
Now, we have 4 minutes left to the show, and
wait,
I almost wait, but if anyone wants to call in quickly to talk about anything we've talked about, we're going to talk a little about the Stanley Cup. Anyone wants to call in quickly, the number to call in is 347-884-8496. Once again, 347-884-8496. We had a caller last episode who calls back repeatedly. It was interesting, so you should call in too if you guys are listening.
I hope he doesn't call this time.
All right, now let's quickly talk about the Stanley Cup to finish off this show. L.A. Kings versus New York Rangers. These two cities have had...
Worst Stanley Cup matchup I could ever dream of.
All right, yeah, for you, Brent. You're a Devils fan. But, you know,
that's
New York
right.
And Los Angeles, big rivals. And the Rangers, they were down 3-1 to the Penguins earlier in the playoffs, and they were able to come back. Last series, they did a great job against the Canadiens. And then the Kings in the Western Conference Finals were able to beat the Blackhawks. Brandon, we'll start with you, since you're a big hockey fan. What's your prediction for this series, and how many games will it go?
Kings in five.
Kings in five?
Kings in five.
All right.
Rangers are going to take game four on the road. They're going to go down 3-1, and the Kings will finish it off promptly and quickly. The Rangers are an inferior team. L.A. is the best team in hockey right now, in my opinion. They're just too good. They've proven time and time again they can come back from a deficit. But now this time they're going to hold all the cards in their hand and they're going to lead this whole series and they're going to dominate the Rangers, especially in the clinching game five. And that's my prediction. Go Kings.
Brandon, Nick, how about you?
Brandon, I'm going to disagree with that. As you both know, I'm not a hockey fan and I don't like the Rangers. But I do think that the Rangers are going to win. I say in six. Because of this, Henrik Lundqvist has always been a great goalie. It's extremely underrated. The reason why he doesn't get the recognition that he deserves is because he hasn't won anything. But the reason being is because everybody around him has sucked. There's really no other way to say it. They've sucked in the past years. But now the Rangers have built up a team around Lundqvist to help him out more. And with more support for Henrik Lundqvist, that's going to help him out more. And I think that Henrik Lundqvist is a better goalie than Jonathan Quick. And the Rangers
definitely
are a fast-skating team. It might be too much for the Kings to handle. And the defensive defenseman Ryan McDonagh and Dan Girardi are both two of the best defensemen in the NHL right now. And on top of that, Henrik Lundqvist, who's one of the best goalies in the NHL right now. I don't know anybody on the Kings other than Jonathan Quick. But who on the Kings is really that strong? And they might not be – I don't see them being able to handle the Rangers' defense.
I definitely agree with you.
The Kings have a strong first, second, third, and fourth line. Jonathan Quick is one of the top goalies in the NHL in the past 5 years. And the Kings are going to make easy handiwork of the Rangers in five games. You heard it here first, right on Sports
right.
Hog. That's it.
All right, so we have 20 seconds left in the show. We have to wrap it up quickly. But I agree with Nick. I think the Rangers will win in six games as well.
Thank you all for listening.
Remember to tune in later this week and early next week for a World Cup preview. It's going to be big. You should also call in and listen up. Thanks for tuning in.